Welcome to Ron Paul and Charles Goyette, the weekly podcast. Ron Paul issued a special report the other day with his outlook for the new year. In it, Dr. Paul says what so many of us have concluded, that the Republic exists no more, and that in fact all our liberties are under siege. It's a comprehensive report, covers a lot of ground, but today on the podcast, we thought we'd talk about one area of concern, and that is your thoughts, Dr. Paul, about the economy, and I think a good jumping off point is the growing wealth disparity in the United States. That's really social dynamite, isn't it?
Boy, absolutely. I think it's a motivation for so much that going on in Washington, because there's a legitimacy to the argument. The rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer. And so the natural reaction to those individuals who believe they're entitled to be taken care of and the government's responsible for it, they said, well, okay, we'll just take it from the rich and give it to the poor. But I don't think it's quite that simple, because I think there are two type of rich people. And a large number of rich people right now are rich because they're insiders with the government. You know, part of the Federal Reserve System, the banking system, part of the military-industrial complex, or what other system that the government is involved in. They get rich for one reason. People who make money because they produce a product, say like a Steve Jobs, and he becomes a billionaire, he hasn't hurt anybody by giving people a good product and providing for a lot of jobs. But too often the people say, well, the poor have to be helped. And I agree, and I think a lot of people agree, there's too much poverty. And the reason I talked about that in that essay was the fact that this was a big concern about Ferguson and the other riots in the city, and the conflict between the over-militarization of the police and the poverty in the inner city. And then, of course, the inequity in the rule of law in our courts dealing with drug laws in particular. So it gets very complex. Just to say that we have to depend on the police and they can't ever be tried and they get off with just about any crime they want to commit. And then the poor and ones who are suffering, yes, we admit they're poor. But, you know, we're spending $1 trillion a year on these anti-poverty programs. Since LBJ, we've spent $16 trillion, and there's more poverty than ever. And so it's the middle class that is becoming poorer, and some who are on welfare aren't doing that badly. But those in the inner city are saying, well, if 16 isn't enough, this have $32 trillion. And this, you know, ignores some of the serious problem. First, we have to admit there's probably some racism on both sides. There's racism in the police department. And there's certainly racism in the inner city where they say that they are being punished because they are of a certain race, and therefore it's an injustice, and therefore we have to have more help and assistance. And yet the poor are poor for a very specific reason. I think the police have been militarized because of government action and the selling of weapons from the federal government to the police. And it's an attitude and it's a culture. But the inner city is poor because it's a bad economy. We have a system rigged by the banking system that takes care of the Wall Streeters. And the poor end up as a result of this. So if you don't understand the business cycle and Austrian economics and sound money and how depreciation of money wipes out the middle class, you just can't spend more money. That's been the problem. And one point I made was this whole thing about Detroit. How could they blame racism on the tragedy in Detroit? You can't do that. And yet they had excessive spending, all kinds of political promises, and they ran out of money and people got tired of the city and they moved out and it went into bankruptcy. Well, the country's not a whole lot better off, but the country can't declare bankruptcy. They won't do it literally, but they will do it realistically by just debasing the currency. So if the federal government owes money, all they do is print money and hand it out. So that is the problem, and that's why we have this inner city crisis. So it's a lot more complex than they want it to be. And I think it's wrong if a conservative argues, oh, no, there's not that much disparity and the police are good people and they're up against terrible odds. And some of that is partially true. But if you limit it to that, then you don't acknowledge the unfairness of our judicial system. You know, if you compare the penalties to the minorities versus the penalties of white people who do the same thing, then you're not being fair. But also, Not only is there unfairness in the judicial system, but it's also a reflection of the stupidity of these laws that are saying that you can't make up your own mind about whether or not you want to use medicinal marijuana. You know, they don't want you to do that. They want to be the parent. And that is what's disturbing to me. And they always say, well, people are going to make mistakes. Absolutely. They're going to make mistakes. It'll be an imperfect world. But why let people in government make these decisions, and then they make mistakes for everybody? And that's where the problem is. Too much dependency on the government to take care of us, you know, economically, and provide safety for us. And then tragically, what we do is we take this and apply it to world events, because we're an exceptional nation and we have all this goodness inside us. We have this responsibility to force it on other people. And ever since Woodrow Wilson, we've been trying to make the world safe for democracy. And take a look at the Middle East. What a tragedy. People, the people that have died, and the money that has been spent. And it's worse now than it was at the time 9/11 occurred. And it continues to get worse because people still believe and accept the notion that governments are there to take care of us, make us safe, police the world, and be involved. And it's completely opposite of what the founders wanted. They wanted a system which was called a republic, where individual rights were protected and individuals had responsibilities for themselves. And it wasn't the government that was going to guarantee medical care and education. Just the other day, our president said, we're going to give free education for 2 years of college for everybody who wants it. And there's not too many people yelling and screaming about this. This is insanity. Where is he going to get the money? And, of course, we do know the government's been involved for a long time in all these areas. And every time the government gets involved to try to improve medical care or education, the only thing that happens is quality goes down and price goes up. And it gives us a situation much worse than they started off with. So in my effort, my token effort of talking about this and why I think there's a lot of problems in the inner city and why I think it's going to continue, unless we think about the basic fundamentals of individual liberties, the whole idea of a welfare state and a warfare state, there's no way this is going to improve. And I think the violence is going to increase until we recognize what we really need. As far as I'm concerned, we need a republic, with the emphasis on individual liberty and individual responsibility.
You wrote about, as our economic conditions deteriorate, about the expectation of increased financial intrusions by the state, specifically things like capital controls. One of the things that you mentioned is that the violation of our liberties is generally approved of or excused by the majority on the view that not all the people are paying their fair share. And it reminded me, in one of the presidential elections, when one of the establishment candidates was very unhappy to hear that not everybody was paying their fair share, and, you know, we'll fix that and make everybody pay. And you said, oh, 40-50% of the people aren't paying any taxes. I won't rest until nobody's paying any.
Good. Taxes. We're halfway there. Let's continue the process. But no, that is an attitude that everybody has to pay their fair share. And that just means a forced redistribution and try to go after the productive people. But do they ever look and think, do business people go overseas because they enjoy living overseas and it's a better place to do business? You know, sadly, the other day, this to me, I'd have to double check to make sure this is true, but there are some British expatriates who live over here are going back to England to get medical care. I never believed it would get to that, but evidently there's so much chaos in the medical care system since we've had Obamacare that they'd rather go back to socialized medicine in England and get taken care of. So it is a real mess, and it is a sad story that we're going in this direction. But right now, it seems like the attitude that everybody has to pay their fair share, and that's why we've come up short. Instead of arguing, well, why don't we create the general conditions for people to work hard and make a good living and give them the right to spend that money and a right to their property? I think that would turn things around in a short period of time. I've often argued that because I expect that we're going to have a major crisis. But if we had a major crisis that this is not going to happen, but a major crisis that wiped out all the wealth in the country, you and I are stone broke and we have nothing, but we had absolute liberty to go to work and keep what we earn. I said, I think we can all be back on our feet in a very, very short period of time. And since those are extreme examples, I think, relatively speaking, the more liberty you get, the more prosperity will be, and the less it will likely happen where special interests will control the system. Because when you endorse the welfare notion of giving a little bit of welfare to the poor who need it, you endorse a notion of transfer of wealth, and lo and behold, guess what? The very wealthy special interests, the banks and the drug companies and the medical companies, they all get control of the government. And that is what gets people angry and upset because the poor people didn't get help. But that should be expected. It will continue. The poor will be second-class citizens. And if we say, well, the people in welfare are doing pretty good. But when a currency crisis comes, when that comes, it's going to affect all of us. And the poor will be getting, some food stamps and some checks. But they cannot keep up with price inflation. So that will not be a solution. But right now, we are witnessing what Mises predicted. The great Austrian economist said that if you destroy a currency, you will destroy the middle class. And that is what's happening economically. And tragically, what is also happening is the fact that our civil liberties are being eliminated along with it.
Well, that's certainly the reality. It's baked into the cake. The debt is very real. The money has already been corrupted. The empire has been bankrupted. All of that is very real, but in addition to being a realist, you're always fundamentally an optimist, and you have written in this piece that the good news is that more and more people are beginning to understand the predicament that we're in.
Yeah, and I think that's very good news, and there was one statistic that I commented on a month or so ago where it said like 80% of people are reluctant to believe what the government tells us. Well, that is very good. But sometimes they're moved by emotions and think that we immediately have to go to war, just for an example on how they changed emotions about Iraq and we went to war unnecessarily. And right now they're being using the propaganda to get us to hate Russia and go to war with Russia, or at least approach that. So, yes, the propagandists are there to eliminate our ability to resist. But more and more people don't believe the government. That is very healthy. More and more people think the foreign policy is ridiculous. And more people realize the economic system isn't working. And the one really encouraging thing is the group of individuals who are the most concerned and are aware of this are the young people. They're in debt from going to school, and they can't get the jobs they want and need. And yet they are very interested in the freedom philosophy. And we have this tool, the internet, to spread this message. Before, I use the word enlightenment. Enlightenment was very, very slow to come and was hard to spread a message outside of the system. Today, the system is very strong. It's the government and all the major networks. But there is an internet, and there are a lot of communications going on, and that's where most of the young people get their information. So for that reason, I believe that we're going to move into a new era after going through, some rough times. And then if we do our job in presenting the case for liberty, then and put into place these principles of individual liberty and property rights and sound money and limited government and civil liberties, it won't take us long. We'd be back on our feet again and be more prosperous than any country had ever been in the past.
Well, thank you, Ron, for another great conversation. And as I wrote in a column of mine the other day, I've been following your work for a long time, and I seriously believe that this is one of the most important pieces that you have done. It's Ron Paul's special report with predictions for 2015, and you can read it in its entirety at ronpaulinstitute.org, ronpaulinstitute.org. By the way, we'd like to thank you for listening to our weekly podcasts on iTunes. We appreciate your letting your friends know about these weekly podcasts and that they are free to you on iTunes. I'm Charles Goyette.